From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott.
I think it is one of the tragedies of our nation, one of the shameful tragedies, that 11 o'clock on Sunday morning is one of the most segregated hours, if not the most segregated hours, in Christian America.
That was the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on Meet the Press in 1960. Nearly 60 years later, a pair of church leaders in Macon, Georgia, observed that not all that much had changed. According to the new Georgia Encyclopedia, Macon is home to more churches per capita than any city in the American South. GPB recorded Pastor Jake Hall of the Highland Hills Baptist Church and Pastor Dominique Johnson of Kingdom Life Church as they talked about finding common ground between white people and people of color in their churches. Jake Hall begins.
I've been thinking a lot about this idea that I can turn off my participation in, or I can turn off my sensitivity to racial issues because somehow whiteness is not considered a racial issue. And yet that construct affects my life in similar ways that blackness affects your life. It is a racial construct that tells me who I am, that tells me both truth and lies. And I think part of the way this discussion usually rolls is that we focus on persons of color and we never talk about how whiteness needs to have a moment of confession in this conversation as its own racial construct.
Yeah.
In this whole system, it itself is a lens that has shaped my life, that continues to shape my life, that I have to try to achieve perspective away from in order, I think, to properly have a dialogue about what race is.
Yeah, I think you can't come to the table and have be honest unless you embrace that. Unless you embrace, okay, I'm a white male. Well, for you, that's right. I'm a black male. What does that mean, first of all, to ourselves, but to the society at large? So it plays into this whole thing with racism, right? One of the things that I always, and I know we have a good dialogue left in front of us, one of the things I always think about is my son, who is now 12, he, maybe like 4, 5 years old, we were at Chick-fil-A. I often tell this story. He comes out of the store, and he says, hey, the girl in the store, something. And the thing was, Jay, he didn't put a qualifier on it.
Yeah.
He didn't put a qualifier on it. And I thought about that. Like, he just said the girl. He didn't say white or black. And it happens to be a little white girl. He did. And I thought, like, man, at what age do we start qualifying it?
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing with us being pastors and theologically, one of the things I shouldn't say hate, that's a strong word, but crud at it when people say God is colorblind. And I say, nah, he knows I'm a black man.
Right. You know, I approach this from the perspective of someone who knows enough to know better in my own place of privilege, my own background. But I see folks like me, too, enter into conversations like this as if we need to hear stories of tragedy or pain or terror or loss so that we can understand. And yet, I feel the other confession that needs to be offered is white folks should understand that without you having to rehearse a lifetime
of pain.
Yeah. We should be able to see that because of common humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been in conversations like this in the past where the moment the temperature finally goes up in a room of folks who both know better is when we fall into this sense of rehearsing that pain for the benefit of a well-intentioned, quasi-liberal white folk who, you know, want to feel that with you so that they can grow.
I think it has to start with us. Mm-hmm. I think if we're saying we're leading people, I think hopefully this conversation, you know, carries out, and maybe we can continue to have it, even amongst our congregations or just amongst friends. It doesn't even have to be in a church setting. Hey, let's just go eat. Let me hear your story. That's what we need to do. We need to hear more each other's stories more. Not the theater, I came through this. Just, hey, man, how you doing?
I was in a meeting a couple of weeks ago, just before holiday. It was a group of clergy. So it reminds me of this conversation. And it was white clergy and clergy of color, mm-hmm. straight clergy and clergy of different sexual orientations. It was probably the most diverse room I've been in for a conversation about preaching in a polarized and politicized age.
Yeah.
And we got past a couple of days of this conversation, and at some point, you could tell the tensions in the room were high. And it was because there was a little bit of tone-deaf white-splaining going on.
Yeah.
And I had to confess my own guilt in that, because I like to talk. One guy, he just said the wrong thing at the wrong time. And finally somebody said, you don't get a cookie for doing what's right. Mm. You don't get a cookie for having this conversation, for being here. No gold star. And I thought, oh, that's it. I mean, we have to get past wanting a pat on the back for our willingness to have an awkward conversation. We need to start achieving something together that goes beyond cookies and gold stars, because those are for children.
That was Jake Hall and Dominique Johnson in an excerpt from a conversation recorded earlier this year for the GPB series Macon Conversations. It was produced by Josephine Bennett and Grant Blankenship. Macon Conversations is made possible with a grant from the Peyton Anderson Foundation. During our listening tour over the summer, we followed up with Pastor Jake Hall. Dominique Johnson was unavailable. When we visited him in his office at the Highland Hills Baptist Church, I asked him to elaborate on what he means when he says he wants to be a new kind of Baptist.
I mean, when I say the word Baptist, what comes to mind for you?
Do I have to say that on tape?
You don't have to use the four-letter descriptions.
I think of fire and brimstone, yeah. And white people, actually, mm-hmm. Oftentimes. I don't know yeah. why. I think because you said Southern Baptist. I think of a kind of rigidity, yeah. I have to admit.
I grew up Southern Baptist, and it was in a faithful but fundamentalist community in Columbus, Georgia, that I took my first steps in faith and learned how to say yes to God. But I found that restrictive, and so I had my own crisis to overcome. Of how do I both break free from that rigidity but still live into the community that formed me and malformed me both. And so for many of my colleagues and fellow students, that was to simply find a denomination that fit their present values and to jump ship, so to speak, or to say no to faith altogether. But that same angst made me go into the Baptist clergy in a different way. Because since they made me and they formed me and malformed me, I want them now to take responsibility for me now that I'm all grown up. But at this point, I see that as their story and not my story. And our brand of Baptist has just, they've taken a different road. And so I have found a vitality within the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship that seeks to create a space for all people. We don't always get it right. But at least in its founding DNA, out of this fracture from the mother church, so to speak, there is a bent toward liberty. And I want to kindle and nurture that in my own little neck of the woods here.
And you said for all people. So that means if you had a congregant who was transitioning, LGBT, gay, that would be okay?
Everyone is welcome at Highland Hills. Now, I can't promise you that everyone in the pew isn't going to raise an eyebrow or nudge the person next to them. I mean, we're human beings in the South. But in terms of the clergy and leadership of this church,
There is no restriction on walking in these doors and being apart. We all stand on the same ground here. We all sit in the same pew.
So what is the role of you as a leader of a flock inside of that? We say, oh, this is how this group believes and this is how that group believes.
They intersect in my pews.
Tell me how, because that's a tough thing to manage.
What I hear you describing is this, that our current political discourse is highly polarized in a variety of ways, between liberal and conservative, between black and white, or between white and all people of color, between nationality, between citizenship and immigrant, or alien. And all of that makes less of us inside the church, from my perspective. And so part of what my job is here at Highland Hills is to remind people that the labels that they claim with such fervor on the way in the door are not the labels that are placed upon them when they sit down.
How about outside of that? Mm-hmm. When they go off onto their Sunday and make their lunch plans or whatever it is that they do, how do you see the mission of your church working beyond in the community? Mm-hmm.
Another thing that we've come to believe here about Highland Hills is that our mission and our life here, that we're not bound by the geography of Macon. And this location that is gorgeous and bears a historic beauty has defined us ever since. And yet our mission here is to the city of Macon and to offer opportunities for sacred space, both here on our campus, but also within the city, and to seek its wholeness and its peace. And so we recognize that this isn't just about us here as the membership of Highland Hills, but a way for us to curate a larger conversation with the people of Macon. And so the past few years, we've tried to press that a bit in our life and work, and also in the life and work of Macon.
How's that?
Well, we are the Baptist that will show up at Mardi Gras downtown. And in the midst,
Mardi Gras has not been a big participatory holiday for Baptists.
For the Baptists, no. You know
Catholics.
All of the jokes. You know all of the jokes about Baptists at the liquor store. This assumption that to be Baptist is to be not only righteous but self-righteous both. And so we've tried to simply show up where people are and be Christian to them on purpose. And I know that sounds both ridiculously simple and somehow strangely radical at the same time. And so we're the church that shows up on Fat Tuesday and offers your kid bacon and pancakes before you head off to an evening of greater revelry. And we show up the next morning downtown to impose ashes and offer blessings and to remind people that they are loved. We offer prayers and walks on Holy Week. We've partnered with a local Americana radio station, The Creek 100.9, to create a space that is neither sacred nor profane, but some odd mix of both that really does kind of destroy the distinctions between the two.
And your desire to get out of the building and interact where people are, it's very different than, you know, I've been at Mardi Gras and there are people there walking around with wooden crucifixes, you know, telling you that your soul can be saved at this point, which is not, I don't know how many people actually come to them at that time. But I don't know if that's the best technique for drawing people in. So you are doing something in a very non-traditional way. Are you considered a radical inside of the faith?
Living in the way that Jesus lived is always radical. And yet ordinary at the same time. Like, this is what Christianity should be like. I think what is extraordinary and terrible are the acts that you described of Christians showing up, placard in hand, and hell on their mind. And they are flat out going to show everyone that's around there the wrath of God. But that's not what people are called to do. But you're not supposed to show them hell. You're supposed to give them a taste of heaven and to weaponize the Bible and to turn the cross into something that can injure rather than redeem is to move backwards and not forwards in faith. And it is an immature tantrum on display. And so we have found in our congregation for these moments to be life-giving. And so this impulse to get outside of ourselves starts to show up in a lot of different ways. So it's instead of recreating the wheel in trying to do good work here in Macon, we partner with nonprofits that are already doing good work in Macon. And we create space for our people at Highland Hills to conspire and partner for the care of our city in and with and through these organizations. We've set aside the kind of tourist mission trips that so often mark church missions, where you send the team off to an exotic locale that has real poverty, and they come back with their stories, right? There is a place for that if you're truly investing in a context. But too often, it's a cheap vacation and a kind of trauma objectification that is not good for anyone, when especially there's real poverty in the backyard in Macon. And so rather than simply sending folks elsewhere to do a little bit of good, we fund and partner with people internationally who are working with underserved people groups. We reserve a lot of what we do for Macon. I mean, part of the arc that's happened to us collectively is that we want to be present in the life of Macon, that it's not about us setting the coffee and turning the lights on and saying, hey, everyone, come discover us, because what's really great about this is us. It's about going out into the city. And, you know, if we believe that God is at work in the city, making it more whole and more peaceful, then we should be a part of that work wherever we find it.
Jake Hall there. He's pastor of Macon's Highland Hills Baptist Church.